My peoples, welcome to another episode of Rants and Randomness. I am Lovie Ajayi, your side-eye sorceress, and this is my podcast where I'm talking about the things I'm loving, the things I'm side-eyeing, and having good conversation with good people. So I am here at the Chicago Recording Company, bringing you the radio voices always. And on this episode, I'm talking about the feel-good, like the fact that Love Nation keeps showing all the love, okay? Ranting about why BCC, we all need to become friends with it. And spotlighting the DF Nigerian food truck, because jollof is a core value of mine, okay? And my guest is the hilarious Kev on stage. Let's jump into it. All right, so my feel good this week, well, I have a couple because, all right, good vacation, good weeks. As you know from episode 11, I had Amanda Seals as my guest. I was also a guest on her podcast and then her live trivia show, Smart, Funny, and Black, came to Chicago, and I was one of the Blackspurts. It was amazing. The show was such a good time. Chicago showed up and showed out, and I was going against Rashida, a.k.a. Sheeds, and she ended up winning the Master Blackspurt for the night. We had such a good time. But while there, an artist named Lee showed up to surprise me and Amanda with portraits of us that she had painted. Her Instagram is prolific_Lee. And these paintings, y'all, they blew us away. They blew us away. I had first met Lee when I was moderating a conversation with Francesca Ramsey, another one of my guests, for her book conversation. And she brought a painting for Francesca. And the painting was incredible. Lee found out I was going to be at Amanda Seale's show. And she shows up and surprises me and Amanda with these portraits. We had to post it on Instagram. So good. I need y'all to show Lee some love on Instagram. Check out her art. Support Black art. Support dope Black artists. And she's one. So that's Prolific Lee at prolific_Lee. Thank you so much for that painting. Thank you for the time it took for that and for capturing my cheekbones so correctly. You nailed it. Nailed it. So there's also the fact that I finally have a reel. So all these years that I've been doing speaking and writing and all this stuff, being on stages, I've needed a reel that kind of showed it all in one. So for the last 6 months, I've been working on that with my manager, Andrea. Finally, my reel is ready. So it's like a 6-minute thing that lets you know when you ask, love you, what is everything that you do? This reel answers it. But one of the things that made me really feel good about it is in the reel and just in general, when I'm telling my story about my journey in blogging and writing and being an entrepreneur, I say how there have been times when I've almost quit blogging. And during those times, I've usually kept on going because people will send me amazing notes about the impact that my work has had on their lives or in their days and how certain times I've made them laugh. So one of the first notes I can remember is it was one of those weeks where I was like, why am I blogging? Why am I doing this? It was back in 2011. And I got a note from somebody who said it had been 6 months since she'd laughed or smiled purposefully because she was going through a major depressive episode. And one of the reasons why she was able to smile was because she read my blog. And I remember another note from somebody who said she was in the waiting room as her mom got chemotherapy. And one of the reasons why she wasn't crying is because she was laughing at something that I wrote. And I always remember those in the tough times, like the work is important, the work is necessary. So in the reel, I mentioned that. And then somebody named Raven commented on my Facebook page and said, in the reel, you spoke about someone who was able to laugh while their mom was receiving chemo because of you. I want you to know how true that is. After my dad died, I rejected social interactions. I was on your website reading one of your scandal recaps, and I feel like that was the moment when I realized I would be okay and I still had the ability to laugh. Please never underestimate your impact. It made my soul smile to read that because there are many times when we don't understand our reach. We don't understand why we're doing what we're doing, and sometimes you question the purpose. But in the times when you question the purpose and you hear things like that, you realize you shouldn't question the purpose. The work is as it should. And even when it's tough, somebody somewhere is getting something important from it. So, Raven, thank you so much for affirming my work, for finding value in it, and for smiling again and realizing that you always have laughter. So, yeah, I can't help but feel good in these moments. So thank you for continuing to show me love, y'all. I really appreciate your words. All right, so my rant this week is about why we all need to use BCC and Reply All is the Devil. So let me talk about it. So in business, and whenever we're reaching out to people, let's say we're reaching out to 15 people in one email, a lot of people have the habit of just sending everybody one email that everybody can then see who got the message, everybody can reply. Here's the thing. I need people to stop that. It is maddening. It is maddening to actually do that, because when you send an email to people who may or may not know each other, you're giving them access to each other, and they might not want that access. So, for example, I don't need to know all 35 people coming to the party. I just need to get the email that says where I need to be, what bottle I need to bring. That's it. It is not required for me to reply all. But here's the thing. People abuse everything. So there's a little bit of laziness in there. One, sending an email to everybody at once is because you don't want to send personal emails to each person. I understand. It is not bad to send it to everybody at once. What is bad is now everybody who is on this thread is now basically subjected to 30 replies of, no, I can't make it. Yes, I'll be there. It's especially frustrating in business, because when people send it in business, it's like, fine, if you send it because of your party, cool. But you in the business setting, why? You should know better. You should know better. I recently got an email that somebody sent about a campaign they were doing, and they sent it to 30 of us, y'all. But they did not use BCC. BCC is here for us to use. It stands for blind carbon copy. It is when you send emails to however amount of people you want to send, but you put their email addresses in the BCC side instead of the to, okay? BCC means everybody gets the same email, but nobody knows who else got it. It means nobody else can reply all. I just think Jesus invented BCC so we don't have to get inundated with 25 emails of yes and sure. Like, I just want people to respect Jesus. And the thing is, yes, I get it. People don't have to press reply all. But I don't trust people to know better. So for the person who is sending the actual email, don't even give people the option to reply all. Just BCC'd already. Okay? I need it to stop, because all of our inboxes are in shambles. Every day, all of our inboxes sound like trash. Like, you get 50,000 emails before 9 a.m. What we do not need are the extra emails from people who press reply all, and next thing you know, you literally have to start seeing your inbox refresh over and over again because somebody's auntie just saying yes to everybody. I want it to stop, and I'm just really surprised that it happens so often at this point. It's 2018. We should all know email etiquette, and I'm just surprised how often I get emails with no BCC. So I just want everybody to make this oath. Please don't be the person who is sending an email to 45 people, subjecting everybody's inboxes to some weak stuff that we don't need. So I want you to commit, you know what I mean? Promise me that you will use BCC, that BCC will be your friend in business and personal emails, so you will not annoy everybody. That's all. So this week I'm spotlighting the DF Nigerian food truck. As you all know, I am a proud Niger girl, all right? I love everything Nigeria. I mean, you know, not everything, but I wear my culture on my sleeve. I eat mostly Nigerian food still, which is why this is important. Jollof rice is one of my favorite foods ever. I even have a podcast now with my friend Yvonne Orji called Jesus and Jollof. You should actually check that out. Go subscribe to that. Anyway, so anytime I am not in Chicago, because I can get jollof rice here, you know, from my mom and from whatever restaurants I go to. Whenever I'm in New York, I always have to find Nigerian food. I'm the person who cannot go a couple of days without eating Nigerian food because it makes me feel weird. My rice levels can get low. It's an actual thing. So last year, I think, I found out about this food truck. I think the New York Times wrote about it. So I decided to go and order some jollof rice, which is, you know, that's the staple. But I also ordered egusi. I ordered moi moi. I ordered puff puff. If you don't know any of these things, look them up. And everything I ordered was delicious. I'm talking, it felt like my mama cooked it. I even took some home to my mom, and she loved it, which for a Nigerian mom to give her approval on some other Nigerian food, that is major. So this food truck is called Divine. It's DF Nigerian Food Truck. I can't remember what the DF stands for. And every time I'm in New York, I have to go. Either I go to the food truck, which sits outside of the Nigerian embassy on 828 2nd Avenue, or I order it from Seamless or Grubhub because they'll deliver it to my hotel. And it is basically like having a piece of home with me when I am in New York. It is so good. A lot of times people ask me where I get my jollof. Naija jollof only, by the way. I don't eat Ghana jollof. Anyway, that is where I go in New York. Show them love. The owner's name is God Shelter, and it's just legit authentic food. I think he learned how to cook from his grandmother, and he now caters and then has his food truck. It's amazing. Go ahead, place an order for tonight. I usually get jollof with stewed stockfish. Yes. And then I get some other snacks. I get a meat pie. It's just bomb. It's not easy to find restaurants that really cook authentic food that you actually like. And this is a true Nigerian authentic food. Get your life. Go and order. Tell them I sent you just because I am such a fan of what they're doing. I love the fact that they have this truck. And it delivers. It delivers, y'all. Go get your jollof. Go get your jollof, okay? All right. Holler. And they're also on social, I think, at DF Nigerian Food Truck. So check it out. And let me know if you order it, if you like it. Shoot me a message. Holler. So for once, can we all file that whole idea of, like, black don't crack under the shelf? Because it can crack if you are under the sun without any type of sunscreen or protection. That is why I think people need to be using Black Girl sunscreen. As magical as our melanin is, it can crack because the sun is a hater. That's why I'm excited, because Black Girl sunscreen, they're created for women of color to protect our skin from sun damage without getting all the other residue like other sunscreens. And I randomly came across a sunscreen on Instagram. I bought it. I fell in love with it. And I started using it. It doesn't leave a white cast. It's fragrance free. You can use it on your face, even as a sole moisturizer, and it doesn't disrupt your makeup. And it contains ingredients that enhance rich complexions like jojoba and cocoa and shea butter. You know I love me some shea butter. It's great for all skin types. So to protect your skin, go to blackgirlsunscreen.com and use the code RANTS25 for 25% off your first order to protect this melanin. That's blackgirlsunscreen.com, and the code is RANTS25 for y'all, and you get 25% off. All right, so I am really excited about my next guest, Kev, on stage. Unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably caught some of Kev's viral videos on these interwebs, such as the sexy praise dancing. He is hilarious, and it's such a joy to get ready for some laughs. And Kev just be making me crack up. Like, I go on your platforms, on your Instagram, and just be watching your video like, this dude is a fool.
That is my goal.
You are a fool. I'm going to give people your bio because people need to understand how dope you are. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Uh-huh. So Kevin is an entertainer. He's an actor, comedian, playwright, director, filmmaker, and content creator. He does it all. Kev is from El Paso, Texas. He was born in his grandmother's bed. True story. I'm going to get that story shortly. His comedic genius was derived from growing up in the Fredericks household, where you had to be funny to stay in the living room with the grown folks. His infectious personality was honed by traveling the U.S. in a military family, learning to make friends quickly. And I think you will see Kev on the movie screen and TV soon. But Right now, he is dominating the interwebs. Welcome to Rants and Randomness, Kev.
Thank you so much, Lovey. I am so very happy to be here. So excited.
It is you.
It is me.
So I always start by asking my guests, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
So interestingly enough, Lovey, I wanted to be great growing up. And that's before I realized what that was. I just wanted to be traveling the world, doing what I wanted to do. I remember even thinking that in elementary school, like, I'm going to travel and do whatever I want when I'm older. So when I was in high school, all through middle school and high school, I played basketball. So being the dreamer that I was like, I'm going to go to the NBA, and that's just going to be what it is for me. I stopped growing at, you know, about 12, 13 years old. And I remember when I was in 11th grade and they asked me, hey, do you want to sit on the bench for the varsity team or play for the JV team? At that point, I was like, man, I think the NBA is probably going to be out of the question if I'm not for sure on the varsity team in 11th grade. So, and I chose to play on the JV team. That's just how I am. I'd rather play than be on the bench. So I played. And then after high school, I tried out for one Division III college basketball team. I remember this white kid was like 5'5", and he crossed me up so many times in a row. I was just like, sir, did I offend you in some way? Like, what? Why are you doing this to me? So I was like, okay, bet. I'll just guard some big dudes, you know, because they can't cross me up. Big dude dunked on me, blocked my shot. Dunked on me. So then I just took my shoes off, and I was like, obviously it's not going to be the NBA. But it's gonna be something. So that's my basketball career ended.
Spectacularly. You know what's funny? So wait, how tall are you?
I'm just like 6'1". That's what I knew. That also, you know, kind of came into play. NBA, I need to be like 6'6", 6'7". I'm just 6'1". And so, heavy at that.
So a white boy crossing you low-key ended your dreams.
Yes. And it was a white boy dunking on me too. And they were just like recklessly hurting my feelings. It was just like I had never been treated this way by anyone. It was just absurd, you know.
You're like, sir, this is just impolite of you. How dare you?
I was like, do you realize I'm trying out for this team? I'm not gonna make it if you keep doing it. Which way are you going? Let me know early. I'm getting embarrassed.
So at least you had your funny to roll back on. When did you realize you were funny?
You know, I remember when I was in elementary school, and I used to get picked on a lot, and I realized when I could make the bullier, is that a word, bullier, bully?
Or bully, just bully? Bully.
Just bully. The bully stopped wanting to fight me by being funny. I realized this is a skill. You know, it wasn't like a big thing. I was just like, hey, this guy wanted to fight me. Now he doesn't. That is a win for me. So, I realized at that moment. And then when we have like family gatherings and my, you know, grown folks and kids were like completely separate in my house, that we had to sit on the ground, eat on newspaper, stuff like that. Don't be in grown folks conversations. But when you're funny in my house, they let you just stick around. You couldn't sit at the table, but you could stay in the living room. And that was like my goal. I don't have to go in my room and close the door. I could just at least stay in the living room and hear what they were saying.
So what age did you get that privilege of staying in the living room with the grown folk?
About 7 or 8. Ooh. When I got my rite of passage. Yeah.
That's impressive.
7 or 8. Yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, that was my pride and joy.
So when your basketball dreams got shot, and how did you go from that to, like, YouTube? What does that build like?
Well, there is a long time in between there. So in high school at 16, I tried stand-up for the first time. My brother told me there was a church talent show. I literally have the same story as almost every R&B singer. It was a church talent show that I decided to join. I told my brother, I'm thinking about doing stand-up. And he was like, oh, this girl that we knew. Oh, she doesn't think you're funny. She doesn't think you'll do it. So I was like, what? Like, I'm funny. I can do it. So I did it. And it wasn't until like 2 or 3 years ago that he told me he totally made that last part up. He just wanted to make sure that I did it.
Like, you better motivate, like, brother.
Right. He inceptioned me. So... I did stand up for the first time, and then kind of in college, I kind of, you know, I was doing plays with my friend, Aunt Davis. We were doing plays for free. We dressed up as old men and just, like, did plays at our church. Then my brother and I entered a play competition while I was in college. I found the acting program at the University of Washington, and we won a playwriting competition. And the university, like, produced our first play. And I was like, oh, snap, this is amazing. So for, like, 5 years, we were trying to make it in the play world. You know, so we did that for a while. We were like, we're going to be Tyler Perry of Seattle, but we could not do that.
Tyler Perry of Seattle.
Yes. We were like, if Tyler Perry could do this, because at this time, Tyler Perry's plays on bootleg were going crazy. So we were like, oh, we can do that. But we couldn't. We like, had one investor, we lost $40,000 of his money. Another investor, $20,000 of his money. So we were just about to give up. Like, I really prayed to God, if this isn't going to work, just take this desire away. Like, I'll just coach my son's basketball team. I'll be a great dad. Like, I'll be happy. Just don't let me think about this. Don't let me daydream about this. That's all I have. So, you know, we had one last play, and we flew out this booker who books Tyler Perry plays. He loved the play. We're like, oh, this is it. We're going to make it. He's like, I want to put this play up in Oakland for 2 nights. You know, this is going to be a smash. All you guys need is $300,000.
What?
Up front.
What?
And I was like, why would we have that? What makes you think three young black dudes have $300,000?
How dare y'all don't have a trust fund? How dare you?
Right. How dare you? So we were just like, I mean, y'all don't come up with that? He was like, oh, no, you got to find your own investors. And that's when we were like, okay, this is just not going to work. Because the thing about Tyler Perry is he was in Atlanta. You can go from Atlanta to Alabama to South Carolina and run your plays all over the South really easily. We were in Seattle, and there's hardly any black people there. The nearest city's in Portland. There's even less there. And then, you know, a dear 12-hour drive away or 17-hour drive away from Oakland, and there's just no feasible way. So before we quit, we had a meeting, me, my brother, and my friend, and I was like, look, before we quit, let's just try YouTube, because I've seen, like, YouTubers are getting paid by their video views. Like, maybe we can take the stuff that we did on in these plays and put it online and see if that works. And there was a viral trend called Stuff Girls Say going viral.
Yep.
All these YouTubers were doing it. So we did Stuff Black Parents Say and Stuff Black Church Girls Say. And we asked our wives to be the black church girls, and they wouldn't. So we had to put wigs on. And like, those two videos, like, it was like God heard our cry. Those two videos both went viral immediately. And that, like, changed the trajectory of my career. Like, the Playmakers were born as far as, like, on YouTube, and that started blowing up. Then my son was like, I want to be like you, Dad. I want to make videos. So I wrote him, like, Growing Up Black, a 5-year-old comedian.
I watched that. Yeah.
Yeah. That went crazy viral. From that, he got a deal, or we got a deal for me to write, direct, and produce a sketch series for them for Austin's TV. And he also booked a Little Rascals remake.
Yes.
So we moved to L.A. for a couple months and filmed that. And once I lived in L.A. for 3 months, I just told my wife, there's no way I can go back to Washington and live. Like, we have to move to L.A. to make it. I'm going to be depressed eventually. I'm going to regret everything. Like, we can't. So, long story short, we moved, and I just started making videos and, you know, just kept churning, and here I am.
So I'm going to take you back for a second. So you were born in your grandmother's bed in El Paso, Texas.
Yeah.
I need to know what that's about. Like, what? How?
Okay, so what happened was my mom kept going into labor, but I wouldn't be born. She'd get an ambulance. I was playing around. I was playing the game. Even before I was born, I was playing around. So we'd get all the way to the hospital. Doctor said, look, the baby's not coming out. Go home. So this happened like 3 times. In 2 days. So the last time, my mom was like, forget it. Like, her contractions start happening. She's like, this is just, you know, Braxton Hicks or whatever. I'm not going to go to the doctor. Next thing you know, water breaks, she's crowning, and my grandmother literally has to, like, deliver me in her bed because my mom waited so long because I had been, like, fake birthing for, you know, the last couple of days. So my grandmother delivered me, and they just saved on a hospital bill. I really think that they just weren't trying to pay medical bills. They were like, "Man, we got this." So that's the true story of how I was born in my grandmother's bed.
I love how you've been playing for such a long time. Like,
I was born playing around. Born.
So then you were a military kid. You keep Washington. You end up in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah. So technically, we were in Fort Lewis, Washington, which is about an hour south of Seattle. But I went to college in Seattle, and then I lived, you know, I bought my house in Tacoma. So I was in college in Seattle, but in Tacoma, Washington for 13 years. And that's, we bounced around from Texas, North Carolina, Virginia, back to Texas, then to Washington. And in Washington, my dad was getting stationed in Spain when I was in college. And he was just like, hey, fam, what are you going to do? Because you can't come to Spain. And your mom's moving back to El Paso. What are you going to do? So I moved out on my own and been on my own. I was 19. I've been on my own ever since.
Wow. Yeah. Man. So when you basically spent your whole childhood moving from place to place, was that why you were getting bullied?
I think I was getting bullied because I had a big head and I was kind of pudgy. Like, another true story, I didn't have front teeth until my adult teeth grew in.
So
my whole, like, from birth to seven, I was snaggletooth. I never grew babies. Like, God really was just, like, messing around with me. He was like, I'm about to set you up. So, yeah, I was snaggletooth for, like, the first 7 years of my life. So, I don't know. I had bullying potential. I think people just saw me. They're like, this guy will be fun to pick on. So that happened for various reasons pretty much throughout elementary and middle school. I remember one time in fifth grade, we just moved to this place. My first day at school in North Carolina, this kid put soap, liquid soap all on his hands and then just wiped it in my eye. I was sitting in the back row and just wiped it in my eye. And I was like, fam, why? And he laughed. The whole class laughed. The teacher kind of chuckled, didn't tell him to sit down. And I was like, this is going to be a long 3 years. So, like, I got bullied like crazy.
Wow. First of all, kids are assholes. Like,
they are. They are.
Who does that? Who's thinking, like, let me get soap in somebody's eyes? And a lot of folks, people say, like, those of us who are, like, the funniest folks, is because we've had to be funny to live.
Yes. And it's true. That is, like, I didn't really find my footing until, like, high school. Like, that's when I finally was, like, a little athletic and funny, and I was a little taller and more confident. But before that, it was hell. School was the worst. So, yeah, it was tough.
Man. But you channeled that into this funny of yours. And my first time ever watching something of yours was probably your son, Isaiah.
Yeah.
It was probably that Growing Up Black skit.
Right.
And I was like, this kid is hysterical. And then I ended up falling through the rabbit hole and it led me to your videos.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy is hysterical.
I remember Cartoon Scandal was the first thing that you posted that
yes!
I was like, oh, snap, Lovey saw my stuff.
Oh, my God. I have to tell people about that. Cartoon Scandal was legendary. So when Scandal started in 2012 and everybody got addicted to it and I started writing recaps for it, it actually was a huge year for me because it was kind of like the success of Scandal was almost tied to the success of my blog, and that as people found my Scandal recaps, they'd find other things that I'd wrote, that I'd write. So I remember one day doing a recap. After a recap, somebody sent me your Cartoon Scandal. Kev used to do these things called Cartoon Scandal that would be a four minute reenactment of Scandal episodes in animation. And I watched the first one, and when I tell you, I was crying laughing.
That
Yo,
was so fun.
Cartoon Scandal was legendary. What did that
do? I used to say it to that. Oh my gosh, that blew. Like, that's the thing about my career. It's like, I've had all these things that have helped me grow. Playmakers, Zay Zay, Cartoon Scandal was like amazing for me. Like, helped me out with a lot of followers. Like, a lot of people started knowing about me. Shonda even tweeted a couple. I remember one time around Thanksgiving, she was like, hey, no Scandal this week, but check out this recap from last week. And she posted my video. And then the next week, she was like, hey, we're back. If you missed last week, post, you know, check. She did like that like two times in one season. And I was just like floating for that whole week. And that was the first year that I moved to LA. And that was like, everybody like started watching. That's the whole time Scandal was on. That was the one question I always got. When are you going to get back to Cartoon Scandal? And the only reason I stopped is because I got a job and I couldn't get home in time to watch Scandal, and I couldn't stay up to like, I would have to stay up to like 3:30, 4 in the morning to get that ready for the next morning, because people wanted it like that Friday morning as soon as they woke up. So I'd have to stay up till 3 a.m. like writing and animating and doing all that, and I just couldn't do it and go to work. But that was like, oh my gosh, that was so good. That was so amazing for me.
I remember around the time when, like, when I'd be late with my recaps and folks was like, where's the recap? I used to say, people, I have to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning because the recaps took me 3 hours because there were 3,500 words. So I totally understood Cartoon Scandal taking all night, and people didn't know. They were just like, we want it. But that is a testament to how good that thing was.
Yeah. I mean, you create the demand, and then you can't even keep up with it. Like, I don't think people look, like, it takes a long time to do that. Like, you have to think of it, do it, or in your case, write it. In my case, you know, do all the voices and pick the songs. Like, but people don't care. They don't care how long. I want it now. Give it to me so I can laugh because I don't want to be at work right now. and that's all they really cared about. But I appreciate that because I'd rather people want something than not care about it at all.
Yeah. And then, so what year did you start at All Def Digital, where you currently are?
I started in 2014 of August, I believe. August, September 2014.
I remember I came to visit the office probably around that time.
Yeah. Very early.
Very early. So, look, people think about creatives and they're like, oh, you can always venture out by yourself, but you're working for a company. What made you make the decision as opposed to insisting that I'll go off on my own to try to make this happen?
You know, the thing was, working here felt like synergy for what I wanted to do. Like, you know, I was writing, directing, you know, producing content. And the one thing I had was allow me to keep doing my Kev on Stage stuff. Because I'd worked with previous companies. They're like, you have to post all your videos on our page. You can't continue to grow your own page. And my one caveat was, let me continue to do what I do. And I'll help build this company. So that was the thing. So All Def was like, you know, very gracious. You can make your own videos. You can still do stand-up and things like that. So I really just felt like this would help me overall as a writer, director, producer. It'd be fun to build something amazing with a group of people. But at the same time, I wasn't willing to stop doing what I did. Because you just never know. In Hollywood, companies open and close all the time. I just had been through that too many times. And I was like, I'm not going to be in a position where this company closes abruptly and I'm stuck, you know, starting all over.
So you did the best of both worlds. You own your content. You're continuing to grow your brand as you're working for somebody else and collecting these weekly, these every 2 week checks, which I am not mad about. Get these benefits and this 401k. I am not mad about it.
I got small children. I got kids. I got student loans. Like, you know, I had to supplement that income. And also, there's this trope that in order to chase your dream fully, you have to quit your 9-to-5.
Right.
And that's not always true at the beginning. Like, working this job has helped me fund my first tour, my movie, you know, web series, merch, like stuff that I want to do. And, you know, it helps take care of my household. And, you know, I might not have been able to be in a position to go on a 50-city tour without the security of, if this goes, you know, I can pay for this myself. And that's why it was so important to me, because I wanted to own my tour. Everything I would do, I want to own 100%. I'll license it to you. I'll sell it to you. You know, we can share in revenue, but I want to be the owner. And the only reason I was able to go on that tour is because I was able to work a full-time job, save the stand-up comedy money that I made to put into the tour.
Yeah.
Whereas if I didn't have a regular job, that stand-up money would be going to bills and things like that. And I wouldn't have had the financial freedom to invest in my own tour.
Was there ever a time where you were like, you know what, maybe this comedy thing is not for me?
There was a couple of times. I had probably the worst experience ever. I hosted a Greek step show, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Divine Nine. I didn't go to HBCU, and I didn't have any family who was Greek. So, you know, Drumline was my introduction. Sorry, black people.
Because you did grow up in Seattle, okay?
I was in Seattle, in El Paso. There's no HBCU, so please forgive me. I didn't, you know, that wasn't a part of my life, right? So I'm terrified. I'm hosting this step show as a comedian. I'm so terrified. I'm reading a note card of all the names, all the fraternities, all the sororities. My first time on stage, Lovey, I'm supposed to introduce the lady of Alpha Kappa Alpha.
Oh, God. Oh, God. What did you do?
I said,
oh, God.
Give it up for the brother of Alpha Kappa Alpha.
No! Oh, God.
When I tell you, they loaded shotguns worth of booze. It was 3,000-4,000 people at this step show. And, you know, I feel like it was worse because there's so few black people in Seattle. This was like the one event that all the colleges around Washington, like, drove in. And this is the one time they get to stroll and meet. And, like, and I offended not only the Alphas and the AKAs, I offended every fraternity and sorority because they immediately knew I wasn't Greek. And they don't even like non-Greek people. So I got booed within I felt the booze reverberate through my body.
Oh, my God.
And the event was 3 hours long.
Oh, no.
And that was the first minute. So I had to keep coming up on stage. It was just, it was so painful. And I didn't host a step show for like 7 years. I had like PTSD about step shows. It was just like, it was terrible. Another time, I was doing stand-up, and it was going terribly. There's only 15 people in the audience. And one of my jokes, my closers that always work, required me to sit in this chair. So I skipped ahead to it, sat in the chair, and the chair exploded. I broke. I fell. All that happened. I got up, walked out, and I didn't do stand-up for like 6 months. And then the final time I questioned myself, I entered the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition 2012. And I had this, and this was going poorly. Like, my set was going okay. And I had this joke where I used to sing to an R&B church version of a song. I would take my shirt off and pour water over myself, and it would just kill. Did not kill, did not get any laughs. So I'm just standing there with 300 people in Oakland, not laughing.
Oh.
Cold.
That is painful.
At those three times, I really questioned, should I even be doing this?
So the times when you question, should you be doing it, what made you say yes?
Well, I feel like I just thought, I'm past that. It can't get any worse. Each time I was like, well, it can't get any worse than this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so, and I liken myself to like an athlete who just has a bad game. Like, you might have the worst game of your life, 0 for 30, miss an air ball for the winning game, but you got to play again. You know, I knew I wasn't going to just stop doing this forever. So once I finished, beating myself up, I got up and I got back on stage and I did it again. And I learned from those mistakes, And in most cases, I used those jokes again and they worked again. But it really, tested my character. Do I really want to do this or not?
Comedy is one of those really, really, really tough things. Because, most people's biggest fears is, speaking in public. When you bomb in comedy, it's basically like somebody stripped your skin off.
Yeah, you do. Like, you feel, naked up there. You're just like, man. Because I can see you looking at me, not laughing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, wow, everybody knows what just happened. You just stunk it up. And it's apparent. I'm supposed to make you laugh, and no one's doing that. Let me go on about my business. So, yeah, it doesn't happen as much anymore. You know, I have jokes that don't work, but I haven't had a overall set that just didn't work at all in a couple of years. And that's, hopefully because, people see me on my videos and they're already happy. When I first started in comedy, you have to win the crowd over. You have to prove to them that you're funny.
Mm-hmm.
But now, most of the time, a good portion of the audience is coming because they've either seen me on stage before or they've laughed at my video. So I don't have to prove to them that I'm funny overall. I may have to prove that I'm funny live, which is something that I have to combat because a lot of, Instagrammers and Facebook people, they're doing stand-up. They're not traditional stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
So people are going and they're like finding out, oh, you're not funny live.
Mm-hmm.
You're funny on sketches or whatever you do, but you're not good at this. So that's the thing that I probably have to fight against more than anything.
So anyone familiar with you knows you are a man of faith, which is something I respect. You do clean comedy. Like, you don't curse. Your comedy is safe to do in somebody's church.
Right.
What one, when did you make the decision to basically live your faith out loud in this way? And how does it affect your comedy in a larger way? Because I know some of your funniest skits are about the Black church.
Right, right.
So, yeah, when did you become a man of faith?
I like to say I was born in the church. You know, I literally, all my early memories are our church. We went to church 5-6 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is that didn't, people are like, man, that's crazy. And that didn't feel abnormal. Like, people accept whatever reality is placed in front of them.
Yeah.
So we went to church Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, you know, 2 or 3 times on Sunday. And all my friends were there. So it's like, this is what we did. So, you know, that's the reason most of my jokes are about church or at the beginning, because that was my first experience in, that is funny. And the thing is, in church, people, especially in the Black church early on, people, it was like sacrilegious to poke fun at anything
mm-hmm.
in the church, anything. But I mean, when I was a kid, this lady was like shouting and she didn't know where she was. And she flipped over, like we had a bench around the offering table. She flipped over it. Her bloomers were everywhere. It was hilarious. And, you know, in the comfort of our own home, I found that people would laugh. They just couldn't laugh out openly. So, you know, I was just like, I don't care. Like, y'all have seen funny stuff happen in the church. Some of this stuff is crazy. So I'm just going to talk about it. And that's what we made videos about it. I think because people had seen it before, they could relate to it. And that's why it was funny. But, you know, I didn't cuss in my comedy because I didn't cuss in real life.
Mm.
Like, I just wasn't like putting it on like, oh, let me be a clean comedian. I don't think that was a choice. Like, I grew up super safe and you could not cuss. And I didn't want to cuss at school and then slip and cuss in front of my mom and get my teeth knocked out. So I was just like, I'm just
because you just got those teeth.
Just got them, lovey. I just got the front teeth. I can't risk not having them again.
You know what it's like to not be able to eat corn on the cob. You know,
right.
You've been there.
Right. You never had to eat corn on your cob with your molars. You don't know what my life is like.
That's a struggle, man. Yeah. You won the struggle. That is a struggle. Man.
So yeah, I mean, I just was doing what I had always done. I don't think it was a choice. Like, I'm going to be a clean comedian. You know, I'm just going to go out there. I don't cuss in life, so I'm just going to go and do my jokes. But it's definitely harder because sometimes the comedians are not doing well. Cussing is just funny sometimes.
Yeah.
You don't really have to have a great joke.
Yeah.
Some people just saying certain words, curse words, are just funny. So it can be like a get-out-of-jail-free card or get-out-of-a-tight-spot card. And what I like to do, I don't want to come across as a clean comedian. What I like is when people leave and they're like, hey, you notice he didn't even cuss?
Right.
Like, that was hilarious. But
yeah.
I don't remember him cussing. Like, that's the joy for me. I don't want you to come across like, here comes a clean. Because then people roll their eyes. He's a clean comedian. It's going to be like boring trash. And clean doesn't mean like I won't talk about real stuff.
Right.
Like, I'm married. So
right.
I talk about sex. I talk about life. You know, I just don't talk very vulgarly about these things. Sometimes I'll talk in code, but
which,
I'm talking
again,
about real stuff.
I appreciate it. Like, again, the approach to your comedy is not like sanitized. It is
right.
Not prudish, but it's
right.
Just not using F-bombs, which is much appreciated because I understand that cursing can be a crutch for comedy. Some folks, if they take all
yeah.
the curse words out, you'd be like, you have nothing left.
You have nothing left. And I could not do it. And I also, personally, I could not just be funny to church people or about church subjects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that just was my personal, like, when I first started comedy, I started in a regular comedy club
yeah.
where half the people are drunk, getting heckled, because to me, I needed to make it with real comedians, and then I can go to a church and work, but I couldn't just be funny to church people because I didn't want to limit myself to only being funny to church people about church subjects, because nothing much has really changed in the church, so that, you know, that material is going to run out, and I need to be able to talk about being a parent, being a father, being a husband, current events, and I don't want to just talk about Black preachers do this, white preachers do that, like, for the rest of my life.
Right, because it puts you in a box.
Know? Yeah, yeah.
And one thing that's really cool is how you talk about your family and your wife online and your boys, who are also hysterical. Like,
right.
Everybody's funny. And I'm just like, poor her, because she got to deal with 3 jokesters all day.
She does.
Melissa is a saint.
She really is. She says she has 3 boys, 35, 12, and 9. And I accept that. I know it's shady, but it's also right. So that's just, you know, the truth. But yeah, my kids are super talented, super funny. Like, they make me laugh. My wife is really funny in her own way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very like Atlanta. She's funny. My oldest son's very sarcastic. My youngest son is deadpan.
Oh,
and my wife is shady.
He reminds me, honestly, your youngest son reminds me of my nephew, who is the most shady person I've ever met. But he be so earnest about it. Like he hurts his teacher's feelings because he's so shady.
My son is like an old young man.
Yes.
He's like a tiny 55-year-old man.
Yes.
He's been here before.
Absolutely.
Like, he feels like he should drink black coffee with his cereal. Like, why are you so ornery at 9? What have you been through?
Look, you don't know his struggles. You don't know his life.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You don't know what he's been through at school during recess.
Exactly.
So how do you decide what to share and what to not share online?
Whew, that is a struggle. Because, you know, I want to be able to put... See, the thing that not cussing helps with is people feel confident to share because, there's no profane language. However, I've learned that people share stuff that they feel like represents them well. So if it's like a really like I had this video of this girl French kissing a fish, that's not going to get as many shares because people are like, I don't want people to know I watched this. You know, that might go in my group chat type of thing. But I feel like if I can think of 3 or 4 funny things to say about something, I'll make a video. If it's not overtly like sexual or ridiculous, I'll make a video about it, you know, and sometimes I make a video that's not even funny. Like, there was a period of time when, like, black men have been getting killed by police. Like, it seemed like for a month, it was, like, 3 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't just keep making funny videos when, like, this is something that I'm feeling. Like, the funny is backed up behind this, like, anger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or fear. So I needed to make, like, I made a video called I'm Afraid I'll Get Killed by Police. Because some of these circumstances are, like, you're not even criminal, not even doing criminal activity. You're just being a black person getting pulled over for speeding. Like, that happens to me. Walking to the store, like, it's not just engaging in crime. So I was like, man, that could happen to me because I'm a tall black man. You know, I look menacing just because I'm big. You know what I mean? Like, before you even see my face, you're like, oh, my God, like, what's this guy on? So sometimes I make videos that are not even funny, and that offends people because then I get to stick to comedy stuff and all that, but I'll never ever in my life stick to comedy. I'll make what I think is funny and I say what I need to say to move on with my life.
Agreed. I think comedy is a vehicle.
If you don't like to go.
Yes, I think comedy is a vehicle. We can't just be like kikiing all the time when it's not natural, but I think part of the power of your comedy is that you do tell real truths in it, but people are laughing,
right,
not realizing they're actually hearing the truth. So you kind of slide it in there. You recently did a video. Cardi B bought like a $500,000 Lamborghini or something that she paid cash for. But your video was about how you were more concerned that she paid $64 at Waffle House.
Right.
Listen, that is so true. How? That's irresponsible because how many? Did you buy it for the whole Waffle House? Did everybody in there eat on your day?
Everybody in the restaurant had to have their meal paid for you to spend $64 at Waffle House. That is impossible. You are reckless. You are on your way to financial ruin if you are spending that much money at Waffle House. It's extravagant. It's nearly impossible.
Like, bless her heart. But... Bless it. Just bless. What's her name? What's her real name? Like Bacallus or something?
Belle Collis Almanzar.
See, you know what? Wow. That sounds like a comic book character.
That's Harry Potter from Queen.
So what is the biggest misconception you think people have about you or your work?
That's a fantastic question.
Yeah. Look, Mini Oprah over here, you know, I be trying.
I think the biggest misconception is that I'm like this all the time. You know, like, it's not a character that I put on, but also sometimes people, like, okay, for instance, people catch me after a show and they want a picture and they're like, oh, don't give me that fake smile. Like, they don't necessarily understand that I flew red eye from LA. I got here at 7 a.m. The hotel room wasn't ready till noon. I haven't slept. We, you know, drove. I did the Love Hour. I did the comedy show. Like, I just got off stage. I'm a little tired and I'm trying my best to smile through this. And people are just like, he wasn't really in a great mood. Or they catch me in the airport. Like, again, people, you know, catch you in the airport.
Oh, my God.
Like, I don't even know where I am yet. This is my third flight in 2 days. My breath stinks. And, you just happen to run into me. You've had a great night's sleep. And they're like, hey, why aren't you being funny right now? Like, I don't even know what time it is.
Yep.
I have sleep in my eye. I don't know where I am. And you're asking me to hug you and smile and put on a picture. So I just, you know, I try, but I'm human. I get tired. And when I'm tired or hungry, I get cranky. So people, you know, if you catch me like that, you might.
That's
I'm
happened.
Always going to smile and do my best, but people just think that I always have the energy to be come on stage for a video. But that video is like 2 minutes long. Like, I can keep that energy up for that amount of time, but other times I'm tired.
You strumming my pain with your fingers, man. Like, people would be like, what? She was not nice that one time I met her at 6 a.m. In the airport. It is 6 o'clock in the morning. I barely even know my name. I don't even know my name right now.
And you know this as well as I do. Like, when you've been traveling a lot, just kind of weighs on you. It's like, when you're just going and going and going, you'll have like 3 days where you're just like, I can't even move. You know, so when people catch you that day, and it only takes one time for you to not be what they expected for 30 seconds.
All of a sudden, you're trash.
And you're trash. And you're canceled. And that one time I met, you know, so that's kind of one of my worst fears is just like, it's hard to keep that energy up every second of every day.
Yeah.
All day long. It's just impossible. So that's probably the biggest misconception.
I need people to give people grace.
Yeah.
Grace.
Please.
Okay.
Please.
I know Jesus gives grace. Try to give a little bit too.
Right.
A GB tired, okay?
Exactly.
So what do you want to do next? Like, I recently saw you posted something, like, you posted about making your own headlines and how you've signed a $100 million development deal with yourself.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you this, Lovey.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am so competitive. Now, I at the same time am cheering all my friends in the industry, and at the same time, I'm like, oh, I want to make my own ways, you know? So it's like Issa and Yvonne, I knew them before Insecure. And this is not name dropping. This is just like a
Look,
real
this
feeling.
Is a name dropping podcast. We do it. It's fine.
Sweet. Sweet. So like, and to see, like I drive, when I go to work out with my trainer, I drive past this humongous billboard of Issa and Yvonne every day.
Yeah,
and it makes me so happy. Cause I'm like, look at these chocolate women on Sunset Boulevard in all of Hollywood. Like, it gives me such joy. And Lena Waithe, in the last 3 weeks, has had a new announcement.
Every day.
Every other. I'm like, how?
Every day.
She is, like, totally killing it. I met her one time, and she was, like, so gracious. And I think she's so creative. And the Shy is so well done. So I see all these things happening for people I know or admire. And your thing with Shonda, I was so happy it was like it was for me.
Oh.
Right? I was just like, Lovey, let's go. Like, I'm pumping my chest. The kids are confused. But it's just like, you know, it's so good to see people who are genuine people winning. So anyway, but my thing that's kind of ridiculous, my dream is to write, direct, and produce my own movies and content. So the deals that those people are signing, I don't even really want that deal because I want to create my own thing. Like, I want to write and direct and produce. I don't necessarily want to sell it or have somebody make it for me. But that's, so it's kind of like ridiculous to be a little envious and jealous of something that you don't even really want for yourself in that way. Does that make sense?
It does. But you know what's funny? I don't think it's ridiculous for you to say I'm signing a $100 million development deal with myself. I think it's powerful to have the audacity to even say that out loud.
Oh, no. That wasn't the part that I thought was ridiculous. I'm saying to be jealous of people winning when I'm on my own path.
Oh,
that's what I mean.
Oh, no, we all have that. We all got that.
Oh, you do too?
Listen, all the time. See, it's human nature to be like, oh, snap, for a hot second, to be like, ooh, I would like that. And then you recalibrate and you focus on your stuff. And
Thank
you're like,
you, so much,
you let it push you.
I needed to hear that today. Yes, because I'm not jealous in the negative sense. I'm very happy, but it's like motivating and pushing me, and I want my own headline. But right now I'm working on, like, I feel like the best creatively I've felt in years because my stand-up is doing very well, but like the creative writing part of me that I used to do for like Scandal and web series, that's creeping up. So me at my optimum best, I'm writing and producing my own TV shows, and I use quote TV shows because technology is changing.
Yeah.
When I say TV, it doesn't mean it needs to air on ABC or HBO or Fox. Like, I prefer to distribute my own content. Like, you go to KevinOnStage.com, check out the new season of his show here.
Mm-hmm.
It's this amount of dollars. Like, I think there's a lot of power in direct-to-consumer, you know, product distribution, because you cut out all that middleman and like I'm advertising to my audience. And I think that's what I would want to do. And then if a company sees that and is like, okay, look, you killed it at this. We want to develop, you know, help you develop your ideas and help you develop other people's ideas. Because that's the thing. Phase two for me after my own stuff is giving other creators who don't have the means an opportunity to see their dreams actualized because of who I am. Like, oh, I can get you enough money and I'll produce your movie and my attachment helps it get made. I think that's phase two for me.
And that's dope, because once we build our own, we got to pass it around, which is what Lena's been doing, which is why every
yes.
other day we're hearing a Lena announcement, because Lena has been putting her weight behind people who can't walk themselves into a room. She's like, I'll walk you in there and make sure your stuff gets done.
And that is so, and this is the thing, Lovey, that is, so this is might sound ridiculous, but I don't think Hollywood is racist. I realize what Hollywood people do, they take care of their own people. The problem is there's only been white men in Hollywood, and all they take care of is the people they went to college with, grew up with, the friend of their friend. And what people of color start doing is saying, hey, this is a friend of my friend, and now you start seeing more minorities getting roles in movies and deals because people help out the people they want to see help. And now, finally, you know, thanks to, you know, Me Too and Time's Up, it's not all white men making the decisions for every single thing.
But
and
see,
I think it's both.
It's a matter of proximity is, of course, how we pick the people we work with. Like my cousin, my friends.
True, true.
You know what I mean? The people who are around us, easy to be like, oh, I know this person. But Hollywood is inherently racist just because they've made it so hard for, like, let's say a black girl becomes the executive at a major network. She still got to fight against the white dudes who were like, and that's just a black show, so we're not going to fund it. So it's like
a matter of both.
That's
true. That is true, because I think of the, that's true because Hollywood, so I hate this, like, a black movie, you know, like, Think Like a Man. Like, these are just movies.
Yeah.
They just have all black cast. So
right.
I take my point back and I accept your point.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for this new realm that we find ourselves. Like, we're not looking for permission to make our content anymore. I love the fact that you can wake up in the morning, see something that piques your interest, and by that night, you've already posted a video about it.
Absolutely. That's like, my goal is to be on your timeline. And like, I consider myself like a visual cartoonist. Like, if you have your favorite cartoon or, you know, like the funny pages.
Yes.
You just go, and some days it's a hilarious one. Some days it's okay, but you check for your favorites. And that's what I try to do. Because some videos that I post, I think, man, this is not really that funny. Some of them are my biggest video, like my Waffle House video, which is like my biggest, one of my biggest videos ever. I just saw that and was like, what do you mean Waffle House is dirty? Duh. You know what I mean? Like, nobody cares about that. We know that. And that turned out to be like a 20, 30 million view video because people thought that was hilarious and relatable. And some of the things that I think I do that are really funny, people are like, nah. You know, so.
It's like me. I will post a random tweet that I'm just like, eh, I thought about it, randomly posted it. It'll have 1,500 retweets. One that I put all the thought into, and I'm like, this is deep. This is it. We'll have 4 likes. You'd be like, oh, okay, cool, 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 cool. All right.
Exactly. So that's why I just make it and post it and let it do what it's going to do, because you just never know what people are going to gravitate to. So just, I don't put much thought into it. Make posts, go on about my day.
So what is your advice about creating great content? What would you tell somebody who's coming up, who's like, I want to do some dope videos, or I just want to start writing? What is your key?
My key, and I stole this from a friend of mine, be authentically genuine. And I mean, I'm sorry, aggressively genuine.
Ooh.
And what that means is, the videos that I make, everybody on the internet has seen that, or a good portion. All I'm doing is taking my point of view and spinning that on that. You might have seen 10 other versions of this video, but people will still be like, I want to see what Kev has to say about this. You know, the Kiki Challenge or Waffle House or Cardi B, like everybody has an opinion about that. So be aggressively genuine in whatever you make. If it's a merch, you know, a t-shirt, a coffee mug that you want to sell, you know, you do hair, just be completely yourself, because no one can take that away from you. No one can take your point of view, your view of the world, your, you know, unique creative expression is for you and you alone. Like, that's one of the reasons you have had success, is because you are just, it's Lovey's point of view. I know how I think about it. Yep. I want to see what Lovey thinks about it. Like, when you got on Game of Thrones, I was like, yes, this is the best of both worlds, because I would love to hear what Lovey thinks about Game of Thrones. This is my favorite show. I know she's going to think some things I think, or she's going to think something I don't think. So when you got onto it, I was like, oh, this is the Lord's divine connection. You know what I mean? So
yes.
And I think you being yourself is why people will come to see you. Not, yep. That's why I don't try to do my version of, you know, I don't try to, not my version, but I don't want to do exactly what this creator is doing, yeah. even if it's working for them.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to keep up a non-version of yourself.
Correct.
I can be myself all day long.
All
I can be myself on a podcast, on a movie, on stage, you know, but I can't be you for longer than a little while. So
correct.
It's not sustainable. Like, the only way I can make these videos every single day is because they're my thoughts every single day.
Yes.
They're just expressed that way. And I think most of the time, I think people get in their head too much. People, I need a camera. I need this equipment. Like, what do you got, Kev? See, I've been making, for the past 4 years, I've shot all my videos and edited them on my iPhone.
Wow.
With the iPhone camera, with iMovie that's free with Apple. I have, you know, DSLRs. I have professional editing equipment, but I don't use it. And part of the reason is because it's just quicker to use it on my phone. But people are like, oh, I've got to save up money and get this, and I've got to get a Red. And like, you don't need all that stuff.
Nope.
Just start with what you can and do what you can. And so you can get the better stuff. And sometimes it doesn't even matter, because my videos wouldn't be any better with a camera that costs $10,000.
Correct.
They wouldn't do any better. And like, people are like, well, I don't know how to start a website. There's so many free tools on the internet that you can start a website, a podcast, a t-shirt line. You can do almost all that stuff in 15 minutes. Like, a version of it. It might not be the best version, but you can at least get started. I think people sometimes talk themselves out of it by saying, I don't have the right stuff. And it's easier to say, well, I ain't got the money, than to say, I'm about to figure this out no matter what.
People,
like, I wasn't even an animator when I did Cartoon
Camera.
That was a program. I still don't know how to animate. That was a free program that had that, and I just used it.
You made it work. Content is king. Some people have the best cameras in the world, and their content is trash. I'm
exactly.
Like, you can have the best equipment in the world, but still be saying nothing of interest. Best lighting, best audio, but nothing.
But nothing of value is coming out of your mouth. Or you can have a grainy camera, and if you're hilarious, that will come through.
Yep. So I always ask my guests, as you're world-dominating, pursuing dreams, raising family, all this stuff, what do you do for self-care?
You know, that's a fantastic question. I'm going to give you the answer. My self-care is lavish vacation.
Ooh, nice.
I work very hard so that I can go anywhere I want in the world. And when I go, I want to stay at the Ritz.
Yes.
I want to have room service when I want. I want to eat where I want, get massages. So, like, next on my list is Australia. I'm saving Sky Miles and Marriott Rewards points, because when I go, I go. You know what I mean? Like, I do ridiculous vacations. And, like, it's wearing off on my oldest son. He is a bougie little unemployed person. Because the last time, we stayed at the Ritz 3 times. For the last time, we're in Fort Lauderdale, and he walks in, and he's just like, oh, I love the Ritz. Like, he said it just like, oh, I love the Ritz. And I just, but that's my thing.
Did,
like,
Grey Poupon appear next to him?
He had all of a sudden, he had an ascot on and a smoking robe. You know, it was just like, it was ridiculous. But I go hard. I spend more money than I should on vacation, because I feel like I want to go see the world, and I want to do it in style, and that's what I save my money for. I mean, of course, I put money aside and all that, but to feel great about what I'm doing and accomplishing, I go out of town, and I fail.
I love it. What about in between the vacations? What you doing day by day, week by week? What you doing?
You know, I have my latest self-care. I bought myself a Nintendo Switch, and I play FIFA. It's just a little soccer game, and it's just, I don't think about anything else but this little dude kicking. I got a little career. I've got Kev on stage. I got a Kev on stage creative player that I'm, you know, I've got a career. I score all these goals. And it's on, like, easy, because I don't need to lose. I need to feel good about myself. So I score like 7 goals a game. I just relax. I don't write. I don't think about jokes. I don't negotiate with venues. I just play my little Nintendo Switch and I'm happy.
Nice. You're not doing massages, none of that?
Not many massages. I used to have a membership to Massage Envy, but I don't have much time to do it. I should, but I don't.
I am challenging you.
One. To get massages?
Go get one this month. One. A 50-minute massage. So on top of that, so you when you get back to the video game, your shoulders be all relaxed. You might score 9
Done.
Goals.
Done. I will get a 50-minute massage this month.
Yes.
Let me order.
Yes.
I will.
Vacationing hard, I absolutely support that. Playing a video game to get your mind off things, I absolutely support that. Let's go ahead and add some pampering to it.
I'm good. I can do that. I will do that.
Dope.
Consider it done.
Yes, I am excited. Thank you for coming on Rant and Randomness. Yes.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a joy.
Man, like, I found out a lot about you, Kev.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity.
And is there anything you want people to know, anywhere you want people to go find you besides social media?
KevOnStage.com. That's it. Social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and KevOnStage.com. By those 5 things combined, you will find out anything I'm doing.
Bet. So, shout out to you. I already know the name of this episode. It will be called Be Aggressively Genuine. So thank you for that major key that you dropped on the people.
My pleasure. I appreciate it.
So I'm going to catch you on these interwebs.
All right. Lovey, thank you so much. Have a great
day.
Bye.
Yo, shout out to Kev on stage for joining me. He's so dope. His content is hilarious. And you want to make sure you are following him on social media. His handle on all platforms is at Kev on Stage, KevOnStage. Show him love because his work is important, it's funny, and it's good. Much love to Chicago Recording Company for partnering with me on this. I want you to subscribe to Rants and Randomness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get it. And please rate it. If you leave a comment, you just might be featured on this show. Your ratings and your reviews make a difference. Follow the podcast on social media. On Twitter, we are at Rants Randomness, no and. And then on Instagram, it's Rants and Randomness. Now I get a lot of messages in my, I get a lot of questions in my messages, and I think a lot of them would be good to answer on this podcast because they're so universal. If you'd like to send me a question that would possibly be answered, email me at loveyrants@gmail.com. That's loveyrants@gmail.com. If you haven't listened to my bonus episodes, go listen to those because I actually answered some questions in my last one about work. And as always, you can follow me on social media. I am at Lovey Everywhere. Thank you to this episode's sponsor, Black Girl Sunscreen. While you're soaking up the summertime sun, make sure to put on your sunscreen. You can go to blackgirlsunscreen.com and use the code RANTS25 for 25% off your order. That is blackgirlsunscreen.com and use the code RANTS25. See y'all on the next episode.